Well, thanks again for listening to the Park Hills Podcast. If you want more information on things we're doing, go to parkhillschurch.com or the Park Hills Church app. Peter has these wonderful words for us. He says, beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you as though something strange were happening to you.
Something strange.
Something strange. You know, I know that I've had these moments in my life, and I think you have too, where you're just kind of like, what just happened? Right?
Yeah.
Maybe a friend that sort of peels off a bit, or, you know, a family member that you are having a great conversation and all of a sudden it turns pretty drastically and you're sitting there just your head spinning a bit, right?
Yeah.
And you're going, what was that? And I think when we, you know, as we work through this particular sermon, this part of the conversation is way harder to preach. So I think it's better for you and I, Alex, just to have a bit of a conversation around this concept. And I hope this is helpful to you. I hope this reframes even what you think of when you hear fiery trial and when you hear something strange. Because when I hear sometimes someone say, you know, something strange is happening, we then conflate that to be the fiery trial.
Yeah.
When what Peter's talking about is something way bigger. So to start, let's just sort of define a little bit of maybe what was the fiery trial that Peter seems to be talking about? Do we even know?
Yeah, I mean,
my— it's speculative, so go for it.
Yeah, my guess is physical persecution. So— you know, as we've been following along in 1 Peter, this is not the first time he's mentioned some sort of like pushback right. that culture is going to give you. Like in chapter 3, he talks about, you know, verse 14, even if you should suffer for righteousness' sake, you will be blessed. But the context of that, what he's talking about is verbal. The verbal words that you use and then being prepared to make a defense, that's all verbal, verbal, verbal. I think there's a ramping up to finally, you know, the whole book of 1 Peter is about living well as an elect exile, somebody mm-hmm. who doesn't fit in the culture. And then you get to 14 or chapter 4, sorry, verse 12, and it's like, so it's going to get really bad. It's going to get bad, and it's or you're going to try to work it out, and then it's going to get bad. It's going to get verbal. It's going to get bad. And then you're going to see a fiery trial. To me, that's physical persecution.
Yeah, I agree. And I wonder how much of it has to do with, you know, a connection to hell versus how much it actually has to do with, you know, there's a number of concepts in the Old Testament called the Day of the Lord that we've done podcasts on a long time ago. And the idea there was that God was actually the one burning the chaff away from you, refining you. So I could go either way with this, that the trial is clearly persecution. The question is Peter using this in a sense that it is directly from hell, you know yeah. that sort of idea, or is he saying a trial's coming, but the fire's good for you? Go yeah. through it, and I don't know either way, which is part
it
of
the refiner's fire or the judging fire. That's what you're asking.
Exactly, yeah. And then he says, you know, don't be surprised as if something strange were happening. And I'm going, I don't know that we understand that in America. I don't know that we definitely don't understand it yet.
Right.
I think it's very possible. And this all depends on end time views and stuff like that, that I don't necessarily want to get into all of that. But I can see a future. I can imagine a future where being a Christian is negatively seen even worse than today. Because right now, you know, we've talked about the culture shift in the last 40 years.
Right.
I agree with that. But I can imagine a future and even a near future where all that we get is vitriol.
Yeah.
And people within the church begin to fall away a little bit because they're really struggling with, I don't like not being liked. I don't like this happening. This to me, I could see churches turning on other churches even worse than are happening now. Mm-hmm. You know, you bigot, you whatever. And those who are holding on to the truth or trying to, or at least claim they are, hopefully that's true, go through an actual fiery trial. You know, buildings yeah. get burned down. People get dragged out in the street and beaten, potentially people even being killed. So it's possible, but I think that's more the fiery trial that he's talking about rather than, you know, my buddy doesn't talk to me anymore.
Right, right. And to just recap what you mentioned there with the shift in culture, what was it, 1994, pre-1994,
yep.
in general, it was seen as a positive to be a Christian. It helped you out in the workplace, in the marketplace, in the community. Then from 94, what was this, 2004, 2014?
14.
2014, it was kind of neutral, like, okay, you're a Christian, doesn't really matter. Post-2014, those numbers are based on some different cultural markers and legislation, mm-hmm. and things like that. Post-2014, it is now seen as a negative. It's a mark against you to be mm-hmm. a Christ follower in culture. And we're going to see that, I think, continue to be harder. But we're not to the place, you know, we've talked about this. We're not to the place where it is so hard to be a believer, like some personal relationships that we have with people who didn't grow up in this side of the world. You know, I mentioned this a few times. I just had a friend of mine who grew up in a Southeast Asian country that I went to school with, and we were friends and spent time together outside of class and things like that, but who had to flee his country because the government was looking for him, and his uncle helped him like illegally escape his country because they were going to kill him. And he felt like that's what the Lord was leading him to do, to get out. And we hear stories all the time of the underground church in China and things like that. You know, in America today, despite the fact that it is increasingly unpopular to be a Christ follower, we're not at that fiery trial. We're not at the place where we have to worship in secret. We're not at the place where just calling yourself a Christian is grounds for arrest and torture.
Yeah. And we can imagine that happening.
Yeah, but we see the direction. Now, is that 5 years? Probably not. Is it 20 years away in the United States? If I'd had to guess, no. But are we headed that direction? I think so.
Yeah, and many people have pulled me aside in the last couple of months. Habakkuk stirred some things up for people, and then now First Peter's doing the same, where they come to me and they say things such as, isn't this terrible? Can you imagine this is happening? This is getting so bad. Maybe the end is near. Sure. It's very possible. But we've lived, like we talked about in the last podcast, we've lived for over 2,000 years where the end is near, but the definition of end is all kinds of things. And at the same time, what defines that end, what makes the end near, can change pretty drastically just based on what God decides to do. And so I've told people, I'm praying for a revival. If God revives our nation, if his spirit moves in a mighty way and people reclaim the truth and follow Jesus, and I can imagine a revival where millions of people come to the Lord and all of a sudden we're celebrating the fact that God's spirit is alive and well in America. I can also imagine an end where, you know, looking at Europe today with less than 1% of believers in certain countries, it's a very Christian culture without any of the Christian mores. Like they have no foundation, but they all act like Christians still. So they're nice to each other. They do all these, and they don't even realize really where that's coming from. And I can imagine that devolving and falling apart. But even if that happens, even if everything falls apart, we know that the Lord is going to return. So he's either going to return or a revival is going to come. That's really the only two options here. And so if the fiery trial really does begin, even then, we still not be at the end. We might be at revival stage. Right? God might use that to actually show the world, my church is going to stand even if you burn it. So our job is just to stand firm and trust the Lord.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that that mindset of often the church grows when the persecution comes, because it brings out the people who hold fast to that. I think, you know, just in general, I'm not speaking about any one church in particular, but in general, I think COVID showed us that, like, who was really bought in and who wasn't, because when it no longer became convenient or easy, or you could get a lot out of church, you know, again, in general, kind of across the board, across America, we saw numbers of people attending church dwindle.
Yes.
And then not as many of them came back kind of after COVID was over. Just looking at that general picture, I think that was a moment of saying, okay, maybe, in general, American churches had catered to convenience, catered to entertainment. I mean, it made us even look at what we do as a church.
Sure. Like,
what are we doing here that's fluff, and what are we doing here that's really solid in the gospel? It gave us a moment to look at that and say, okay, you know, the people who are sticking it through are the ones who are here for the gospel. And then I think also as culture kind of ebbs and flows, I think like you mentioned, the the Judeo-Christian ethic that is woven into our culture is helpful, but it's not necessarily any more tied to being a disciple of Jesus.
Yes.
And so those things are in our culture, and that makes it a little bit easier to be a Christ follower in our culture because that ethic is built in. But the more and more it's no longer moored to the gospel and theology, that's where some of those pieces are starting to be chipped away at. And short of revival, I don't know that that's going to get built back together. Now, the Holy Spirit can really work and can revive our nation, and, and that's our prayers. All revival has started with prayer. So we pray for that, but we're watching what the Lord is doing because, you know, kind of across the board, nations have come and nations have gone,
yes.
and power has shifted. And so this could be the end time, but it's also maybe not. Maybe there's hundreds, thousands more years. We don't know.
Yeah.
We're ready.
Yeah.
We're ready now, but we're ready for the future too.
I think that's great. And to your point that you're just saying there, I think opens up the can of worms for us in a good sense. We live in a culture that, whether it realizes it or not, is completely defined by the Judeo-Christian ethic. Mm-hmm. Even the, you know, people, I've heard people say things like, Christians are racist, therefore that's why slavery was allowed. That completely is short-sighting the entire conversation, because the slavery act itself was abolished because of Christians. Mm-hmm. Now, did every Christian agree with that understanding of the scriptures? No. Were they wrong? Yes. And you can be wrong within the same worldview and be reading the word incorrectly while you have other people who agree with you in the sense that Christ is king and he's in charge and I'm following him. You could be sitting next to each other in church, both agreeing completely with who Jesus is and disagree with elements of your theology that would cause a major rift. Like, slavery is a great example because it feels so far in the past, even though I know it's not. It, you know, it's not as far back as it feels. But when I sit and look at that, what made our culture shift from seeing specifically Africans as lesser than a full person? Because the Constitution even says that, right? Mm-hmm. That's one of the downsides of our early conversation in the Constitution. You know, they get a 3/5 vote or whatever. They're 3/5 part of a vote. The fact that that has now shifted completely to where we are now shows me you value life. You value humanity as someone who has value. Where does that come from? Well, we as Christians believe that everyone is made in the image of God. So because they're made in the image of God, there's a worth, there's a value there that needs to be upheld, which is part of the reason why the pro-life discussion is such a big thing. It's not so much that Christians hate women and don't want them to have health choices. That's the stupidest argument I've ever heard. Part of what makes Christians, and I don't know really any Christians who don't hold to this view personally, right, that I would never go through with something like this. They as pro-lifers say the reason why that matters is because I want to speak for the unborn. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is you can have someone who's not a Christian hold to a pro-life view. They don't even know why they care about life as much as they do, but really they're aligning with us in some way because they are taking what they like about our faith, you know, the buffet line of Christianity. They're taking, oh, I like the image bearer thing. That sounds good, you know, or, oh, I like the idea of love. Let's do that. But then what happens is sometimes in our culture, they take a little bit from the buffet line. They're not actually following Jesus. There's no actual relationship. There's no development in a walk with Christ. And so then they take this idea that's an inherently Christian idea. Our worldview builds this as a foundation that leads to how we love life, how we love humanity, how we love whatever. And then they twist that and make it something that doesn't comply with the gospel. And then they run and then they go, well, you're the real bigot because you don't love this way. It's like, whoa, that's not even close to – and that scares me a little bit because we have individuals who think they're fighting a holy battle by the way they vote. And they're convinced that if their person doesn't win, that's the fiery trial. Mm-hmm. And that's not even it at all. You know, you were talking about an interesting idea of like the naturalist movement, which I think is a really helpful way to maybe spell this out in a different way.
Yeah, it's this idea that people who have very different views and worldviews, because that's what this really gets down to. It really gets down to worldview. What do I think? How do I think the world works? How do I think culture, philosophy, all those things work? Two people from very even opposite worldviews can end up with the same output or the same belief about a topic. And they kind of meet in that middle ground, but everything else or some other things are very different, are how they got there. So the example that I thought of is the naturalist movement. I know a lot of people who are very passionate about going back to naturalism, staying away from, for example, processed food, staying away from synthetic chemicals and things like that, because God created the human body and God gave plants and animals to this earth, and he matched those up so well that to synthesize and use all these chemicals and all these certain processing in foods is and certain medications, things like that. There's an idea that we're taking away from what God gave us to naturally, the way our bodies were designed to work. It's even shoes. I think a super fascinating argument that there's kind of two schools of podiatry. One school of podiatry says the foot is a flaw. We got to fix it. We got to support the arches. We got to fix heel strike. We get pronation, all this kind of stuff. They say you got to buy shoes because they're going to fix your foot because your foot stinks. And then there's another side that says, the naturalist side that says, God created your foot as perfect. Mm-hmm. And take away all those things, wear minimalist footwear. I think it's really fascinating. Use your foot as it was intended to be. So,
yes.
So you take all of that, some of that naturalism comes from God created this way. Let's go back to using things the way God created them. So they choose more naturalistic homeopathic mindset. Additionally, that usually comes with like a conservative and Christ-following mindset.
Yes.
Additionally, on the total opposite side, the very spiritual, liberal, Mother Earth type mindset does the same thing. Like it's a worshiping of Earth itself. It's kind of this pantheistic viewpoint, or what's the other one? Not panentheism, but pantheism. And there's this spiritualism that we need to be connected to the spirit of nature.
Energies.
Yeah, energies. That, yeah. Very tends to be politically liberal. Tends to be very politically leaning toward the left.
And ironically, but, barefoot.
Yeah, and barefoot. and so that group of people it makes a lot of the same choices. Let's do natural foods. Let's do homeopathic treatments. Mm-hmm. Let's not run to diagnose everything with a chemical drug that's going to fix it. Let's meet Earth where she is at would be the way they'd say it. And then these two groups that are on opposite ends of the spectrum meet in this place of like natural homeopathic mindset. And you're like, oh, we share the same views. And in fact, like there's completely different. This is tongue in cheek called the Dolly Parton effect, because Dolly Parton appeals to everyone, like people who are way different all love Dolly Parton, the kind of the typical Southern.
Well, Beyonce and then a racist, right?
Yeah. Well, the typical like Southern rural person and the, West Coast. Dolly Parton has tons of fans there, and then the West Coast urbanite.
Sure.
Like they both, so they call that the Dolly Parton effect. But anyway, it's just that idea that these two people, very different in worldview, meet in the same output. And so you made a connection of that's not fiery trial.
Yeah. So I think in those moments, let's say somebody's a naturalist from the Christian perspective.
Yeah.
They might get mocked by someone in their own church who doesn't agree with them on, they might call them crunchy, or they might say, oh man.
Which crunchy actually now is not.
I know it's become less of a.
It's no longer, what's the word, pejorative?
Yeah. It's no longer pejorative. And if you don't know what crunchy is, we pretty much just described it, but it's people who can't handle processed things, don't want to eat those at all, so they make their own stuff. And usually we talk about granola as the ultimate.
I think that's where the term came from, granola people.
Yeah, they eat granola, they're crunchy.
Which, I think there's a lot of merit there.
Totally. So let's say you've got someone in your own church who's maybe from another generation, maybe grew up eating McDonald's every day and has an amazing heart somehow. There's people like that I know, people who, have eaten terrible food for 85 years. Their grandma fed them lard and they are,
Actually, lard's pretty crunchy. It'd be like true. Vegetable oil. Their grandma fed them canola oil.
There you go. That's a good
Yeah, this is showing you how defined this can get.
It's showing you how much I know about it.
We were letting you off the hook with your natural shoes and everything else. Alex makes his own footwear out of chicken skins. I'm kidding. Yeah,
I did take the inserts out so they'd be flat on the bottom.
That's fantastic. Well, I just want to tell you, one of the things that we love about Alex is the amount of little random hobbies that Alex has that you would never expect. And he'll just show up and be like, hey, I made soap last night. And you're like, what the heck? All right, that's cool. So it's kind of – so this actually might work. I don't ascribe to a lot of those things. But I respect you, right? And we have slightly different views on some of that. But it doesn't change the foundational aspect. But if I were to mock you or to joke around with you, like we have a great relationship, so that wouldn't mean anything. But you could get offended and you could be like, oh,
fire trial.
And it's like, whoa, that's not even close. That's closer to what chapter two was talking about, right? Sort of this verbal abuse. And in our case, it would be, you know, good hearted and fun. And we just like each other. So we like to joke around with each other. But if, you know, like I've had people from another generation in this church say things to me that would be really hurtful if I didn't give them the benefit of a doubt and give them some grace. Again, that wasn't the fiery trial. Now, if you're at a, you know, I want to say Coachella, but I don't think a Christian would go necessarily to that. But, you know, like let's say that you go to a festival and you're with a bunch of crunchy people and you're sitting across the table and a bunch of crunchy people from a liberal perspective stand up and just completely start whooping you because they don't like the fact that you love Jesus. That's the beginning of what Peter's pushing at with the fiery trial.
Yeah.
And what he's saying here is don't be surprised when the world turns back on us because Satan does hate the fact that we are holding a view that puts him second or last, you know, whatever word you want to look here at. And he desires to be number one. And so the big struggle you see in scripture is this constant pushback between these spiritual beings. And sometimes there are just human beings that are mindlessly floating along with this. And we're actually having a conversation about worldview, not secondary, tertiary, you know, whatever layers of idea you have that you're going, no, I hold to this because I do believe God cares about the earth and I want to live this out and I want to be this way versus I'm never going to agree with this person because they don't have a Christ, you know, Christ foundation. They don't have a worldview. Now I will talk to them and try to draw them over to Christ, but I'm going to stand firm even if it leads to a fiery trial. And we're not there yet, but I think those days are coming.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think to land this illustration where we're at, you know, suppose you're at this, you know, handmade, very crunchy table that's with these two different worldview people, where he's saying, don't be surprised is it might be easy for us as believers to sit at that table and think, hey, we have this in common. We're eating organic, you know, handmade butter at this table.
On a table made from one piece of wood that we found in the woods that we carved meticulously.
Carved. Yeah. We might think like, oh, everything is going to be fine because this output looks the same, but then we shouldn't be surprised when all of a sudden we find out, oh, the worldview is different. Mm-hmm. And even though it looked like we were meeting in some place, we're not from the same worldview. That's, you know, that's really important. We don't think the same things about the way the world works. And what Peter is saying is more and more, don't be surprised by that. Like there are people in our world that are more and more, you know, he's speaking to first century people, but even 2000 years later, different culture, different geography, all that kind of stuff. Just don't be surprised. This isn't strange.
Right.
People are going to reject you even when it looks like it's working out. That's, you know, that's the whole thing of First Peter. Like we're trying to live well, but don't be surprised when all of a sudden it doesn't.
Yes.
When all of a sudden it's way more challenging. When all of a sudden you thought you were sitting at the same table, everybody was getting along and they said, wait a minute, you didn't vote this way, or wait a minute, you don't think this about this other issue.
Yep.
Wait a minute, you land on this spot on whatever political, you know, there's a million political issues right now that are tense between believers and non-believers in their worldview. Wait a minute, you don't. What are you even doing here? And that's why he gets to verse 14. If you are insulted, you are blessed. That's more repetition of chapter 3, but then gets to the intensity of 15. Let none of you suffer as a murderer or thief or as an evildoer or meddler.
Yep.
Like the context there is, don't suffer like a murderer. How does a murderer suffer with the death penalty, or a thief?
And with the guilt and the shame of all that they've done.
Yeah. And verse 16, if any of you suffers as a Christian, the connection of suffering there that I'm seeing is some of you could suffer very intense ways as a murderer, thief, evildoer, meddler, and some of you could suffer very intense ways as a Christian. Like, those two sufferings are the same in this passage. That's the fiery trial. But there's no shame in that. There's glory to God.
Amen.
We're not surprised. Like, oh, it happens. This is what happens when we choose to follow Christ.
And I think what differentiates Peter, and this will, I think, end the conversation. What differentiates Peter from what we're going to go through in our world is Peter was speaking to people who are moving out of a very pagan culture with, you know, polytheistic pagan culture. Every Christian's going to stand out. What's weird for us is we don't stand out as much as maybe Peter's disciples would have stood out, because we are so steeped in a culture that is based in this Judeo-Christian ethic. However, we're going to start to look less and less alike, everyone, as time goes on, which then I think does lead us to this fiery trial. So be prepared. You might have to defend yourselves in ways you didn't ever think you'd have to.